When President Trump issued his executive order freezing federal hiring, it contained a clause against using contractors to make up for it. Often these types of rules are kind of leaky. For what services contractors are actually seeing right now, we turn to David Berteau, president and CEO of the Professional Services Council. And Dave, what are you seeing from contractors right now with the purported freeze going on?
Well, Tom, you correctly cited, if you go back to the president's memorandum of January 23rd, it did have a very clear clause that says that the federal government cannot use contracts to circumvent the intended effects of the hiring freeze. And we've seen supplemental guidance issued, the joint guidance document issued by the Office of Management and Budget and the Office of Personnel Management about 8 days after the president's memorandum, and then a very long memorandum from the Deputy Secretary of Defense on the civilian hiring freeze impact on DOD only. All of those documents, though, taken collectively, are not crystal clear in terms of what exactly constitutes an attempt to circumvent. So the concern that we've seen on the part of some programs and some contracting officers is a question of how much evidence will I need to have that, in fact, by issuing this particular task or by issuing this contract or by changing the scope of a particular contract, how much evidence do I need to have that I am not circumventing the intended effects of the hiring freeze? And what we've seen is a variety of reactions to that, as you might expect. In some cases, programs and contracting officers think they have clear evidence that they're not circumventing and they move forward because it's important. In some cases, the guidance documents, particularly the DOD document, which says here's all the places you can get an exception to the hiring freeze, as long as you can link your contract to one of those exceptions, you're pretty safe. But there are also places where, in fact, there's been a hesitance to commit to new tasks or to issue contracts because of concern of I can't prove that I'm not circumventing. They want somebody else to go first.
And this decision-making is a little bit like a Rubik's Cube in the sense that they also have to think about the fact that this is contracting officers, that they're operating under a continuing resolution. And
absolutely.
So what initiatives they take, they don't want to get in violation of the Anti-Deficiency Act or whatever.
And typically what we see under any continuing resolution that has an endpoint that's in the near future is a twin concern of I need to husband my money carefully because I'm not sure how much I'm going to get in the next continuing resolution. We particularly see that on the civilian agency side. But also, you don't want to get to the end of the continuing resolution and have a pretty substantial amount of an unobligated balance left over, especially in one-year money, because then you're likely to lose that to something else. So you have competing dynamics there. We're starting to see those at work, I think, in terms of contracts, where there is no question of violating the hiring freeze. We're seeing occasionally some expansion of activity because they do want us to, in fact, obligate the funds that are necessary for the missions and tasks at hand without waiting until you get too close to April 28th, which is the expiration of the current CR.
Is your sense that the increase in activity because of the hiring freeze making contracting activity somewhat higher than it might have been if we had just not had the freeze but still operating under the CR?
We haven't seen enough evidence collectively that's an aggregate effect yet. The obligation data for January, which we got from the Treasury Department last week, shows a slowdown in contract obligations in January, but that's consistent with what we usually see, in fact, over the last couple of decades, an inauguration month, the January in which a new president is inaugurated or even the current president is re-inaugurated, we have seen a slowdown in contract obligations just because of that activity. So we did see that in January. I don't think we have the aggregate data yet to say what February is going to do. But back to the question of how does a contractor or a contracting officer determine that they're compliant with that hiring freeze, we've even had cases where some programs are being required to actually sign a prescripted language that attests that, in fact, the requirements being procured under that contract are compliant with the guidance. So that signature is a big hurdle for some people to get over because what kind of documentation do you need to do that? That's the impact we're worried about.
And I guess there are some contracting officers that might take the attitude, well, I do 10,000 contracting actions a year. Let them find it.
And see if it... That may well be the case. And ultimately, you know, the government has to get its work done. And in many cases, contractors are an essential element of getting that work done. And so the overriding dynamic is we're going to move forward where we need to move forward in order to undertake the activities that need to be done and accomplish the missions that need to be accomplished.
We're speaking with David Berteau. He is president and CEO of the Professional Services Council. And there's a third element overlaid or not really maybe more buried in all of this. And that's the idea of a return of A76 competitions, which had been banned by the Obama administration. And I'll bet a lot of contractors were saying, yippee, we're going to get A76 back again. But that seems put off now indefinitely.
The concept of A76 is a good one. The basic concept is if the private sector can perform the work and can do it more cheaply than the government, then the predisposition would be to use the private sector to do that. Unfortunately, a lot of times the way A76 is implemented is much more convoluted. That doesn't actually lead to a conclusion based upon that simple kind of a calculus. I think that the bureaucratic process by which A76 would be undertaken would need to be revised as well, including the cost elements and the basis of a cost comparison between the government and the private sector in terms of actual cost. There are some places where A76 likes to pretend that the government is really, really cheap, but the reality is very different.
Because there was a hint of that in the executive order talking about reducing the federal workforce through attrition. It said one of those ways is to look for things that can be done by the private sector or outsourced. But they didn't really go much further than that little simple sentence.
There is. And obviously one of the things we want to watch for is the document that we expect out of the administration in March, which would lay out the overall assumptions and spending targets for the fiscal year 18 budget. We won't see that budget for a few more months, but the summary document, which they refer to as the skinny budget, could give some indications as to expectations about where those savings might occur in which agencies on which programs.
Yes, given the CR and the fact that it might go the full year and the fact that there was an 18 request now being revised by the new administration, and plus a supplemental DOD request coming out sometime in March, the question is where in this house of mirrors do you look for some kind of idea of where federal spending might be going?
Right, yeah. You have to look at the calendar, and there are some very real near-term events. You've already mentioned the CR. That expires April 28th. Something has to happen to keep that going. A supplemental request, a budget supplemental that would come up from DOD for fiscal year 17. You have the movement inside the Congress of moving forward with an FY17 appropriations for defense. There's not a lot of drama in terms of the content, but there's plenty of drama in terms of the process.
So in the skinny budget for 2018, what is it you're expecting in terms of procurements, you know, that top line procurement figure?
I think we have to look for three things there. Of course, the overall budget is driven by a couple of major assumptions. What does the OMB and the administration assume about economic growth? What does it assume about interest rates and the cost of inflation, the impact of inflation, and prices of commodities? Those are big drivers overall. Taken inside that, then you have to look at what does it assume for both domestic and discretionary spending for civilian agencies and defense discretionary spending for the national security purposes. And what does it assume about the Budget Control Act caps for fiscal year 18 for those? You know, for the last 6 years, we've had those caps in place. And interestingly enough, even though they've been modified a number of times to a very small degree, the caps have essentially also become the floor. So that whatever the cap is, that's what you spend up to. One of the things we really want to watch for in this budget summary, the so-called skinny budget, is are the spending caps adhered to? Do they remain floors, or is there a distribution of cuts, particularly in the domestic agencies, that could portend dramatic reductions in spending for contractors? The reality is that the hiring freeze historically doesn't get you a lot of savings in the near term, because the immediate impact of a hiring freeze is nobody leaves.
Right, that's right. And as you say, there are ways around it in the guidance for the freeze itself.
There certainly are, and the money's probably there to do that, because the CR does give you the full funding that was there in the last fiscal year as well. So there were no cuts in those continuing resolutions. The real question is going to be, are there cuts in fiscal year 18 for some or all of these agencies?
And I guess for that, we'll have to wait. David Berto is president and CEO of the Professional Services Council. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tom. And when that skinny budget comes out, I'll be glad to come back and we'll do another update.
And we'll chew the fat on it, I guess, huh?
Yes, sir.
All right. We'll post this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.